gentlemen, to the coughing of 2 hours of talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the island paradise, where chemtrails are affecting the lungs of even my very special guest, Penny Bright. Welcome, Penny.
I think at this stage, my voice, it's not affected so much by chemtrails as the flu, but however, yeah.
Well, Penny, you just did a whole bunch of stuff yesterday with Leon Panetta, the Secretary of the United States, who just visited here. I'd like you to talk about that a little bit. And also I want to talk about why you were pretty much the only one out there.
Yes. Well, I mean, given that this is arguably the most significant visit in 30 years, I mean, this is the U.S. Secretary of Defense, and he's now announced that New Zealand are now going to be allowed to have our ships visit. He's dropped the ban on New Zealand naval ships entering U.S. ports, which is supposed to be a really big deal. I mean, I think people should have been out in their hundreds. But, basically it was me and my friend Jack, who, in the absence of anybody else appearing to have done anything, we just were on the side of the angels, and it just so happened that the time that we picked to hold a protest from 1 till 3 outside the entrance of the War Memorial in Auckland just happened to coincide with the time he was actually there, which was 2:45. So how was that a synchronicity? Because what was happening is you couldn't get a copy of the itinerary. It was all top secret. But just Googling, the wonderful Google, found out that after he arrived, Panetta was going to be given a reception at Auckland Government House, and then at some stage he was going to be laying a wreath at the Auckland Hall of Memories. So, of course, I ring the Auckland Hall of Memories, and it's all top secret, and they can't tell me when he's going to be there. So that, oh, bugger it, we'll just go from 1 till 3. And then someone from the media, who probably spoke slightly out of turn, confirmed that, yes, he was going to be there at 2:45. So it couldn't have worked out better. Beautiful, fine Auckland day. Able to park my car really close, because that's always a thing when you've got all your gear, where you're going to park your car.
Yeah, by the oath.
Yeah, so we set up with, of course, the famous banner stands, which means that you can have two people and four banners.
And Penny, can you actually explain to people those banner stands? I'll do it. Basically what Penny's done, ladies and gentlemen, is she got some buckets, poured concrete into them with two PVC pipes in there, so you can stick a pole in on either one of them, and because they're concrete and they're in buckets and they're shaped the way they are, you can use those as your banner stands and you don't have to hold them up. You can do remember that time, Penny, we were outside, TVNZ Studios doing a swine flu protest with the banner stands sitting up there, and you had the two little fold-out chairs that we were sitting in, protesting au naturel?
Well, that's right. Protesting's never been more easy. Because I have to say, as you get older, you get more into energy conservation, namely your own. But, so the thing is, you secure the banner stands, you've got your banners there. So we had four banners, and what was brilliant was that the entourage, you know, first of all, you get all the cops on the motorbikes and flashing bloody lights and all the rest of it, and then they slowly turn around the corner. Well, they couldn't miss the four banners, so you've got, you know, top brass and army uniform looking at one guy. The car had Navy written on it. He almost did like this exorcist thing where he swung around with his head to have a good look. The first banner was the famous morph of George Bush into Barack Obama, saying, different faces but same old pro-war, pro-big business USA policies, you know. So that was a bit of a face slapper. And then, of course, tying in John Key, had the big picture of John Key, once a Wall Street bankster, always a Wall Street bankster. And again, explaining that in the year 2000, John Key was a foreign exchange advisor to the New York Federal Reserve. And then the next one, which is my favourite, is the one, the key thing in life is sincerity. Once you can fake that, you've got it made. With this big picture of John Key, and he's got a Merrill Lynch tattoo on his head, on his forehead, and a big dollar sign tattooed on his chin. And then the last one was the famous Tui billboard banner, which said, John Key's not looking after his own and his corporate mates' interests. He's looking after the public. Yeah, right. So those were the four banners, and it was just brilliant because we got them going in and we got them coming out. and TV One, to their credits, took photos of that because as they filmed the entourage going in, they actually did a close up of the banner on national TV that the Bush Obama morph, and you could read exactly what the banner said. So we seized the moment, we gave it a good shake, and we made national TV, just the two of us, but it was enough.
Mm. Now, there should be a bunch more people there. I mean, as we've said before, this is a pretty significant visit, like one of the most significant in recent history, really. And yet, the people who you'd expect to be there were not.
Well, I'm in a blinding state of confusion as to what on earth that's all about. I mean, normally, who's played a leading role in helping to organise any form of anti-war protest is Global Peace and Justice Auckland. But, a What's On column came out. Nothing was organised. So, no, in terms of, Global Peace and Justice, the Mana movement, so-called socialist Aotearoa, the students, the women, the peace movement. I mean, I just think, nobody else had organised anything. And, I mean, there should have been hundreds of us there. But anyway, never mind. Some of us were there, and I know that the feedback we've been getting is that there would have been other people there if they'd had maybe a bit more notice. But what's very interesting is trying to help publicise it, because I only called in a couple of hours. That's having a short call is always difficult to get people there. And it was during the day, which is tricky if people are working. But couldn't post on Facebook. I couldn't put the post up on my own Facebook page. I couldn't post it up on the Facebook page of other activists, which I thought was significant. And anyway, someone helped me out by, just changing the wording a little bit and putting it back on my page. But again, it's a short call. And so you just got to do what you can with what you got.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's also been a little bit of controversy around Occupy in New Zealand is a not for sale movement, where you've been lambasted by people just mentioned previously. Would you be willing to divulge anything about that, or is it not appropriate?
No, I will, because being a veteran activist since I was 18, and I'm now in my 58th year, I mean, I've never been subjected to such filthy, defamatory attack in my life. And basically, I just want people to be aware that if you get people who come from nowhere with no proven track record as activists, and they make a beeline for policy or any means of getting the message out, like websites or Facebook page or whatever, just exercise a bit of due diligence, because in my view, you own nothing to hide, nothing to fear. And if anyone's had a background in the activist movement, well, if you Google somebody's name, and beware if they don't want to give you their name, or if they want to use more than one name for no apparent reason, ding, 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 ding. And you just need to exercise a bit of due diligence, because I was very concerned about this American woman, this Linda Ann Wright, who came from nowhere and appeared at Occupy Auckland. And she told me to, so this is direct, that both her parents had been ex-US Marines, and the only men in her life had ever been US Marines. I'm going, And the reason why I was thinking, was because my father, he joined the British Army when he was 17. And he was actually in Palestine in 1949. And what happened was that when he came back to New Zealand and he worked at Dunlop's rubber factory, because of his military background, he was approached by the SIS and asked whether or not he would be prepared to spy on the Rubber Workers Union. And my father declined, but he passed that on to me. I'm thinking, okay. And, of course, the very famous story of Rob Gilchrist, who was the SIS informant in the animal rights movement, whose former girlfriend was the one who potted him in the end. He'd had an army background for about 7 years, and he was well and truly absolutely intertwined in that activist movement. But, I mean, if I'd known that he'd had an army background, because I didn't, I mean, I would have been suspicious. It's just common sense. Use a bit of due diligence. But, I mean, I think that it's fair enough to ask people, what is your track record? Can you provide any referees? Can you you know, if you're, you know, you're 41 years of age and you want to start running sort of training camps for activists, well, what's your activist background that people can learn from? And, yeah, so what really concerned me was that with the Aotearoa's Not For Sale group, what happened was we had voted on our policy at, you know, it was at, that my suggestion was that what we should do is be very focused in the campaign to help stop the sell-off of Mighty River Power, which is the first of the electricity state-owned assets that the government wanted to sell off. And so we voted at Aotearoa's Not For Sale and agreed that, yes, we were going to try and get the Mighty River Power asset sale declared an unethical, socially and fiscally irresponsible investment, that to encourage people to pledge not to invest in Mighty River Power, and to try to encourage thousands of people to switch off Mercury Energy, which is 100% owned by Mighty River Power, so that their profits would drop and make the proposed investment very unattractive. So we voted on that at the meeting. We voted on that on the street at the big march on the 14th of July. And then what happened was, it's like, clunk, the ball was dropped. And what happened was, we had this wonderful leaflet that was being distributed in its hundreds on the 14th of July protest, which was encouraging people to join the boycott of Mighty River Power by switching off Mercury Energy, very well received, and it was a major organising tool. Well, this Linda had set up the website Aotearoa's Not For Sale, and when I asked her, I said, well, could you please put the leaflet up there so people could download it? No, she says, it's got to go through an editorial board first. And I said, well, where are the minutes? Were we ever agreed to do that? And why on earth would you go to put back through the egg timer for moderation a leaflet that's already really good and it's already been distributed out in the street? Why would you do that? Anyway, I said, well, who are these people? And she said, oh, I'll introduce you at the next meeting. But really obstructive about trying to put this leaflet up on a website that's supposed to be helping to push our agreed line, okay? So in the end, oh, I just got... I was very unhappy, and so what I did, helped get a bit of research done on dear old Linda, and then we find out that the through who is, you can actually check information about a website. Then we find out that Aotearoa's Not For Sale track back to occupydemocracy.co.nz via Germany, back to Linda Enright's own private company, Consensus Limited. And of course you just go to the company's office and you find information about Consensus Limited, which included amongst its stated aims to minimise risk to business. Well, you think, this is slightly odd, especially when this woman's now purporting to be a socialist. How are you pro-business and anti-business? How the hell does that work? So anyway, what happened was, in the end, I basically potted her. And what I did, I blind copied to a number of activists my hard questions, which she'd never answered, because I wanted to know, why did she use two names, Linda Ann Wright and Linda Miller? Who were her clients at Consensus Limited? Who was getting this information? Because I've got a friend who's very experienced in matters concerning websites and information, and a lot of people use the same password. So if you've got this website set up, which is acting like a drift net to get various activists to come in to the official organising group, and you give your information, well, what's happening with that information? And where I'm really concerned about that one is with the huge campaign against the swine flu scam back in 2009, and you know about that because, I mean, you were the one that got me interested in that issue in the first place. And I end up being, a very close friend and ally with Jane Burgermeister, who is, you know, the Austrian Irish investigative journalist who sort of set the world on fire by taking criminal charges against Baxter, the company that somehow in a top-level biosecurity laboratory managed to mix up live bird flu with a seasonal flu virus. And, of course, Jane also filed criminal charges against the Director General of the World Health Organization. You know, pretty gutsy, cheeky stuff. Well, what happened was various people offered to help Jane Burgermeister. They sort of inveigled their way on. Of course, you know, you're trusting, you want people to help, and next minute they turn against you. And one of the key women there was an American woman called Joanne Creamer, and I did a little bit of research on her, and she had a US Air Force background. And in the end, I mean, with the various international activists against the swine flu scam, I mean, I just realised we had to act in a very decisive way, and it was time to prune off the deadwood. And so I said, I don't believe that we should have anything more to do with A, B, C, D and E. Cut, you know, just have nothing more to do with them, prune off the deadwood, and let's carry on, which is what we did. But then what happened with Jane Burgermeister, a guy called Johan Nicholson, offered to set up a website, which he did. Well, then he used it against her. Jane couldn't end up accessing her own website, and then there was this outrageous post saying, oh, worse to the effect, oh, basically we just have to sort of kill off the 10,000 most sort of powerful people in the world, and sort of we'll all be fine. And it's a really inflammatory post which could then be used as an excuse to clamp down on everyone. Well, what happened with Linda Ann Wright? Oh, this is some months ago now with the Aotearoa's Not For Sale website. What she did was talk about the need for spring training activist camps, and I don't want a bar of this, I said. No way, because Aotearoa's Not For Sale, it wasn't an activist group. It was a broad-based coalition group involving a number of different groups from a number of different political parties and organisations. And, I mean, where the hell did that come from? So, you know, ding, 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 beware. So what happened was...
Kenny, we're coming to break, and there was a meeting that I wanted to discuss as well after the break that Jonathan Eisen and Catherine Smith attended, where you were calling this information out. And having a proven track record yourself and having known these people from Socialist Aotearoa and John Minto and all the other socialists here in New Zealand, you'd think they'd at least give you some kind of modicum of respect. But the way I hear it and the way you've told me, John and Kath have told me, you were simply lambasted and your questions were never answered. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, the show that's all about Stalinistic triumphs.
Bonkers.
I wake up every day as a daydream. Every pin in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. I know I care about is sex and violence, and every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let you give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I mentioned, of course, that I don't like lambasting activists or exposing dirty laundry or things like that. I don't do it, generally speaking, unless they've done something that is unconscionable, unforgivable, and shows a side of their character that is unforgivable. And what has been done to Penny Bright by Socialist Aotearoa leader and Joe Carolyn and John Minto, Mike Treen, and of course some of the Occupy people fits in that category. And this is the only time when I will actually come out and talk about these issues with people is if I feel that the truth about the situation must be known and can't be accomplished any other way. So, Penny, if you would divulge what happened in that meeting that we alluded to earlier, I'd be much obliged.
Right. Well, what happened was this was Thursday, the 16th of August, and it was the most undemocratic kangaroo court that I've ever been subjected to in my life. What happened was there was this open letter which contained a number of untruths and defamatory statements, which I had never seen beforehand. The vote was taken at the meeting to give this letter to me. I was given 3 minutes to reply to these allegations. So all the basic principles of you know, a fair hearing, your right to know exactly what it is you're charged with and your chance to, you know, defend yourself in a proper way, there was none of that. And all I could think was, oh, my God, I've never been treated in this way by police, by local or central government. Good grief, these are people that want a better society, and this is the way that they act. God, I think I'd rather have what we got now, actually. But anyway, so what happened was, it's just that people didn't quite get the difference between transparency and privacy. Because what had happened was, I had, like I say, got information that was available in the public domain, and what I had sent out out was these questions to Linda, saying that I was available to discuss this matter at any time with anybody who was interested. I always made myself available, you know, to meet with anyone face-to-face, and I wanted to know, one, why Linda had been so obstructive about putting the Boycott Mighty River leaflet, our main organising tool, up on the Aotearoa's Not For Sale website. Why did the Aotearoa's Not For Sale website link back to her private company, Consented Limited, which had a stated aim to minimise risk to business? I wanted to know, what are you doing with all this information you're collecting about activists, Linda, and who are your Consented Limited clients? And I'm speaking as someone who, 31 years ago in 1981, I was outed as a subversive by the SIS in the anti-Springbok tour campaign. There was a list of 15 people, 8 subversives and 7 radicals. John Mintel was named as a radical, I was named as a subversive. So in terms of the state forces in New Zealand, it seems pretty clear they know which side of the fence I'm on. And I haven't been a member of any political party for 25 years. And, but the SIS still won't give me my file back, which means obviously it's still active and they're still keeping an eye on me. So arguably I'm doing something right, wouldn't you think? Anyway, so for other people to say that, like, I'm an enemy of the people, well, which people? You know, who are you lining up with? So what happened was at this meeting, there were 3 options that people could vote on. One was to completely exclude me from Aotearoa's Not For Sale. And I was one of the most active activists in that campaign. That's a fact, you know. So they could exclude me completely, or I could have like a 3-month stand-down period, or the third option was I could apologise to Linda. And it's like, excuse me, I will apologise to nobody when I've just asked a number of hard questions which have never been replied to. And John Eisen, the question that he raised was, well, is this information that Penny's provided about Linda, is it factual? And the person who was acting as the convener, it's like she did a double take, like someone slapped the face, and she said, oh, it's not relevant. And John says, I think it is. And of course it's relevant. You know, how is it wrong to tell the truth when there's some serious issues here and they're not being replied to? So what happened was, I will stick up for myself, and I had a go about how unfair the process was. I said, well, when do I get a chance to reply to the allegations in this letter? And of course, what ends up happening is that, because also while Linda was there, I asked her, who are your clients for Consensus Limited? She just put her head down, and this howl comes up from the group, like I'm attacking her privacy. No, I'm not. But they just didn't get it, the difference between transparency and privacy. And Joe Carolyn, in a disgraceful display, compared me with Paula Bennett. He said, oh, your initials are the same. You did what Paula Bennett did when she released this private information.
He said your initials are the same, ergo you're corrupt to share.
I'd attacked her privacy, and I was basically as bad as Paula Bennett. And then had a go at me because I was getting my money from unearned income, because I get money from flatmates, that's how I live. Well, I've never made a secret about that. I'm not on a benefit or anything, because I have flatmates who choose to live in my house, no one's making them, and that's the money you get to live off. Hello? Well, my understanding is that Friedrich...
How did you earn the money to pay off that house, Penny?
I worked quite hard, actually. And I was lucky because interest rates came down, but, I mean, I don't know...
Didn't you used to be, like, a welding instructor or something?
Yes, I was, and I've worked hard, and I've saved my money, and... But anyway, the point is that I just said that's a low shot, and I just thought that was disgraceful. But anyway, moving on, so what happened was there ended up being this vote. 15 hands went up to exclude me, and 11 votes were for me to apologise to Linda. So I picked up my stuff and I walked out, and Joe Carolyn says, I think you've still got some property that belongs to us. And I said, yes, badges, and I will return them. And so about an hour later I came back, because for the 14th of July March, I know it's really, badges are really important, that they're a really good way of getting money. So I'd been one of the people quite active in getting these badges made, and we ended up making about $600 to help pay some bills, etc. And I've made the banner sash thing, and I thought, I can't be bothered bloody undoing all this, so I just put both their banner sashes with all the badges back in a cardboard box, knocked on the door, went back into the meeting, put the badges on the table, and I said, here's your badges. I said, carry on with your kangaroo court. Turned around and walked out. And
Teddy. I just got to inform you at this point, I get so many comments and emails of people that have watched the videos that I've done of you and the radio shows and stuff like that. Like, God, I love this woman, you know, and it's that exact reason. Enjoy your kangaroo court. And I walked out.
Well, I mean, it was outrageous. But you see, the background to this was that basically Aotearoa's Not For Sale, which is a board-based coalition group, hadn't been meeting. And it's like we'd had this marvellous march on the 14th of July. We'd voted on the street and there were people keen as mustard to get on with switching off Mercury Energy, which is the main thing that I was focused on, and we're not meeting. And I think part of the thing with United Front politics is that how it works is you have in a United Front, you have different component groups, but one group or some people in one group can't make decisions for a broader base group. That's not democratic. And I think that's been the root cause of the problem, that there have been very blurred lines of demarcation and there's been some very undemocratic decision-making. But basically, like, oh, you know, Socialist Aotearoa, they met on a regular, used to meet on a regular basis on a Thursday night at the Unite office, and then that night was used by Aotearoa's Not For Sale. And then a decision was made, oh, well, we'll just get back to Thursday night meetings for Socialist Aotearoa. And it's sort of like, I had a bit of a spat with Joe. Well, hello, where's the democracy there? When did Aotearoa's Not For Sale decide not to meet on a Thursday night? Anyway, we had to sort it out, because, I mean, my way is to deal with people one-to-one, and that's what I tried to do with Linda. And it's only when I got no response and I kept being blocked, that's when I took things further. So what I tried to do over about 3 weeks was to get back to a new meeting night on a regular basis, and that's managed to get the Greyland Community Centre. But, I mean, I've done things in a proper and democratic way. We've got minutes in a proper way. And so what happened was on the 15th of August, we set up a new group called Switch Off Mercury Energy, and we're trying to get 100,000 people to switch off Mercury Energy. We have elected people as media spokespeople, elected people running the website, elected people running the Facebook page. We're doing things in a proper way. Totally unlike this other Mickey Mouse outfit. And so basically, I mean, we've picked up the ball and carrying on with the campaign. So anyway, that's the guts of it. But what happened was, to cut to the chase, what happened was I ended up contacting a top international security consultant because I wanted another opinion, which was basically, had I been responsible for vicious personal attacks, or just had I asked reasonable hard questions, and was it a legitimate question to ask why a website for Aotearoa's Not For Sale tracked back to Linda Ann Wright's private company Consensus Limited, which had as a stated aim minimising risk to business, and given that this woman's come from nowhere with no previous track record as any form of political, social justice or human rights activist, but as an IT specialist consultant, business consultant, both parents are ex-US Marines and the only men in life have ever been US Marines. And the response I got, I can't give this person's name directly, but I can quote as an international security consultant. And the response was, I do not know anything about Linda, but would not be too concerned about her connections to US Marines. Her business interests are noteworthy as you describe them below, and your questions to her are pretty direct. I gather she has not answered them, so that is a reason for concern if indeed she is using the site to collect information on people. It might pay to have an open meeting of the members in order to discuss her possible conflict of interest, i.e. minimising risk to business while opposing asset sales, while purporting to be a socialist. The way you can air your concerns and she can respond or not. That way you can air your concerns and she can respond or not. I never did figure out who the editorial team are. As a worst-case scenario, she could be working for the cops to gather intel on the group's activities, intentions, etc., which is why an open debate might flush things out a bit. I'm sorry that I'm not further up with the plan with regards to this woman.
It's like you simply need to tell the truth in order to find out what the real truth is, I found. And if people aren't willing to listen, if they're not willing to answer the questions, then you know that the truth is not their objective. And then you've got to ask, what is?
Well, I mean, the thing is that, I mean, I have asked hard questions. I haven't had replies. And I mean, I've been treated as an absolute pariah. But, I mean, you know me, I will stick up for myself. But, I mean, I have had to take matters to the point of going to a meeting that was open to the public, and I've, you know, had someone say, look, me, oh, sorry, Penny, we're going to have to ask you to leave this meeting. I'm saying, well, I'm not going. We'll call the cops, and then we'll see who the revolutionaries are, and put my foot down. And having been dragged out of I don't know how many bloody council meetings, people know that I meant it. And this idea, oh, we'll escort you out of the meeting. Anyone lays a hand on me, that'll be assault. And they know that you mean business, especially if the meeting's been open to the public. You know, but I wasn't just gonna sit there and have my good name, and I do have a good name, trashed. That's not on. That's not fair. I mean, when people's rights are under attack, stand up, fight back. How is it that doesn't apply to me? Bullshit. Anyway, sorry.
You know, there's the FCC regulations to worry about that, Penny. But I have this feeling that counterintelligence programs that were developed during the 60s in order to spy on people, discredit people, and defuse movements, and if necessary, eliminate effective people, that system is here too, and it has not gone away.
Well, I mean, it's a no-brainer to me, and that happened in the Occupy movement as well. What, again, we had other people came from nowhere, and their main role was to spread disinformation and cause dissension from within, and I've seen it before. People hate the infighting. They hate it. And what it does, the enemy from within is your worst enemy, because they white ant your group and they make it dysfunctional. That's what happened with Occupy Auckland as well. You pick on the most effective activist, you try to discredit and undermine them by telling lies and spreading misinformation. That's what happened in Occupy Auckland, and that's what, I mean, you know, they've been having a go at me in the same way. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm just not putting up with that, because, you know, how can it be wrong to tell the truth? And as someone who's been outed by the SIS, who's someone who's recognised, arguably, by the forces of the New Zealand state to, you know, to effectively be an enemy, well, excuse me, I'm concerned about young activists, what's happening with this information. But what I'm really concerned about is we've just had the visit of the, you know, the most significant visit of this US Secretary for Defence, and where the hell has the opposition been? Where have they been? And that really concerns me. Could it have anything to do with the fact that you've got now this, what someone who I, in my considered opinion, is dodgy, being in quite a key position in terms of websites and helping to get the message out? Has that, I don't know, has that played a role?
Okay, and it's a valid point. And people need to realise, you'd hear this information if you're very loyal to this person or loyal to Occupy, or realise no one person represents Occupy. No one person represents the truth or anything like that. You have a look at their background, you have a look at their character, and you judge them by that and their actions. Nothing more, no insinuation, just the facts. We'll be right back.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh yeah. That's right.
We go brush. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about protecting business interests. the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. It'd be great if anybody would visit the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com and subscribe for $20 a month. The reason why I ask for those sorts of things is because, well, basically, don't have the resources on my own or business contacts yet or anything to actually keep doing this show without your generous donations. Quite literally, I am utterly dependent on my audience for survival, and it's not complicated. Bills got to be paid. Food's got to be consumed. You know, tried stargazing. It didn't work. All right. But anyway, back to Penny. What was the other thing that we were going to discuss? Hold on. Before we go to Occupy, we also think about the mentality of the kangaroo court kind of thing that you suffered. And I feel kind of thing... basically, one of the reasons, and this is theoretical, I don't know, but you have a look at the behavior as what happened to you in this kind of Stalinistic type court situation, and then you have a look at how those people who should have been there at this Leon Panetta protest just simply weren't there. I mean, I've got a convenient excuse. I was real tired from interviewing Lindsay Williams and doing all this editing and stuff like that, and I wanted to just kind of chill out and enjoy my Friday night. Sorry, Leon, you're not worth my time, bro. But but the rest of them, I don't know, but I suspect that they might have been giving you, Penny, the cold shoulder, being the one who actually kind of pointed this out and organized everything and stuff like that. Maybe their personal vendetta against you for trying to get to the truth of things is more important to them than the cause.
Well, I would hope that that's not the case, but the only reason why, me and my friend Jax picked up the ball because nobody else was doing anything. I mean, I Googled, I looked around, on site, there was nothing else happening. So, I mean, you know, being a professional protester, I mean, I can organise a protest in an hour. Well, this one took about 2 hours. But, I mean, sometimes you just got to seize the moment. And like I say, it's just being on the side of the angels, as it were. The fact that the time that we organised our protest just happened to be coinciding with the time that Leon Panetta was going to be going past, it couldn't have been worked out more brilliantly. It was perfect. But what happened was, I mean, that was from 1:30 till 4 that we were out there. And then we'd go back home, and then we knew that he was going to be staying at the Langham Hotel. Well, I was beside myself. Again, it's like I can't sit here at home knowing that he's at that hotel. Well, we still need to be there. So what happened was I put out again another short call for people to, you know, please be there, try and be there from 8 till 10, at least to have a presence. In the end, there were just two of us. When I first went to try and get set up, I mean, that's the problem, like I say, you've got to have the car somewhere where you can unload the gear so you don't have to carry gear for bloody miles. Well, I'm parked on a yellow line, but of course there's cops inside the Langham Hotel and this cop opposite comes over, you can't park there, it's a yellow line. I said, oh shit, because it's a no-brainer. If there's one person and there's cops, no, you always need to at least have two people so someone's a witness. So what happened was I had to go around in a big fat circle. When I came back, there was someone there who I got to know through Occupy Auckland. So that was that, parked the car, and it was just two of us with two banners, but at least we were there. And what happened was we got into a lot of discussion with people that walked past. The cops had to say we were there, and about 9:30, you know, the cops drive past on their motorbikes and, you know, lights are flashing, etc. Then the big van with the blacked-out windows goes past, so that no doubt was Panetta coming back to the hotel. But, I mean, at least we were doing something. But there should have been hundreds. Anyway, never mind. Well, I've tried my hardest and done my bit. But questions do need to be asked. What went wrong? But at least something's better than nothing. But anyway, but the questions that I still want answers. I want to know, why Linda was so obstructive about putting that leaflet up. Well, now that we, you know, Aotearoa is not for sale. Basically, they've pretty much dropped the ball and switch off Mercury Energy. We've picked it up and we're running with it. And by the way, we need a bit of a hand too, folks. We've got a marvellous quote for $2,300 and we can put out colour A4 leaflets 50,000 of them. So we need about, you know, 115 people to give us $20 each. That would be really good. And if you want to help in any way, just have a look at the have a look on the website, switchoffmercuryenergy.org, if you'd like to help, and we'd love you to help just a little bit. A number of people just giving a little bit of money will be a real big help to us. But with this Linda stuff, I still want answers to my questions. I want to know, why does the Aotearoa's Not For Sale website link back to her private company, Consensus Limited? What is she doing with the information, and who are her clients? And I will continue to ask those questions. And hopefully, you know, some of these young activists, full stop, with more than two brain cells to rub together, will recognise those are fair questions.
Well, you know, I find in a... What was it talking about? The truth is a revolutionary act, especially in times of universal deceit.
Yeah.
And I think the whole idea is behind patriotism, for instance, is that it costs nothing to be a patriot after somebody else has already paved the way and made it popular. Because in the beginning, those people who stand up for others usually kicked down, lambasted, insulted, defamed, and in some cases killed. And people got to recognize the methodology that that goes along with it. And more to the point, the warning signs. There are so many very, very easily identifiable behaviors and practices that can draw suspicion to people who are the members of any activist movement. However, the whole point is that you need to get rid of people who are not proven to be effective activists, because if only two people are infighting and it's in front of everybody else just goes, I'm not going to sit here and just listen to two people bicker and argue. I'm getting out of here. Whole movement disbands. Okay? That's the whole idea behind COINTELPRO, basically, is to make everybody disband, be ineffective, simply by causing a little bit of ruckus here and there, spreading a little bit of disinfo there. Basically, they're just dropping a little eyedropper of mercury into an entire reservoir and making it toxic.
Well, what we worked, we had some experience in the water pressure group when we went through a bit of a rough stage at one time, and what we found out was a way of dealing with it inside the meeting was that if that abusive behaviour was not acceptable, was not acceptable, and basically, if that was to happen at a meeting and people didn't behave, the meeting would stop and there'd be a process issue, which was someone would move that person be asked to leave the meeting, not the group, but the meeting. We only ever did it once, but the power of a shower of hands going up, asking for someone to leave the meeting, it is hugely effective. You know, you imagine you're the one person in the room, everybody there has got their hand up asking you to leave. Very powerful. No security guards, no cops, no nothing. You sort it out yourself, but that is a way of fixing disruptive, abusive behaviour inside the meeting. Now, when you've got all this back-chatty, backstabby, poisonous stuff, because Linda never confronted me once about the accuracy of my information, what she did, she was on the phone howley-bagging to other people. And where she, I think, got a number of people with concern was that I was going to release private and personal information about them. Well, I do know the difference between privacy and transparency, and that's not my style of work at all. I've actually got a lot of integrity as a person, which is part of the reason why a number of people do open up and tell me stuff. And I keep it to myself. What I released about Linda was information available in the public domain, which was of concern. The fact that I've got a top international security consultant who's basically agreeing with me, I think is a platinum vindication and validation of what I've done. And I will not back down. And what I know will happen is, as the truth gets out and people think about it, especially as we're talking about, where the hell was the opposition to the US Secretary of Defense, that people need to start asking some very hard questions.
Mm-hmm. Now, and the thing is, You would be interpreted by some people listening, of course, as that you're the one poisoning the well, you're the one causing dissent and things like that. It's not about that. It's about getting to whatever the truth is, whatever it may be. What if somebody is actually an agent that is in there to disrupt and derail a movement, and you did not ask the questions, you didn't find out the truth, and they succeed in their objectives. What if? And it's just so, and it's such an easy what if, because all they need to do is answer that one question. Is what Penny has found out true or not? It's a simple yes or no answer. It doesn't have to be that disruptive. It doesn't have to be that difficult. And the answer is pivotal about whether or not there are agents among us subverting what we do. Penny, thank you very much for your time here today. I mean, that's just my take or whatever. And I don't know Linda terribly well. And I'd like to have a conversation with her to get her side of the story and talk about all of this kind of stuff in an open and transparent manner, you know, and not be aggressive, not be accusatory, you know, just give her a chance to answer the questions. You know, it's just that simple. Right, we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Penny, for doing all the tireless effort that you do, which, basically nobody else in Auckland can compare. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.